Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers produce over 600 varieties, types, and styles of cheese. That's twice as much as any other state. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're telling the stories behind iconic dishes. We learn what it will take to save New York's most famous egg cream, discover the importance of the goat neck in the East Village, and take a trip to India for delicious flatbreads.
Our customers who come in to get egg creams and t-shirts, they love to talk about their childhood or their teenage years or their college years.
I was living in Nepal, in northern India, and out there there's a real famous dish, a classic dish I should say, is called paya.
Parathe Wali Gali, or as it awkwardly translates in English, the lane of the stuffed flatbread makers, is probably one of the most popular food streets in Old Delhi.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. In our last show of the summer season, I had Stephanie Siano of World's Best Cheese on to discuss the then proposed tariffs on cheese and other specialty food imported into the U.S. from the European Union. If you didn't catch that episode, it all comes down to a 15 or so year dispute centered around European Union subsidies for Airbus. The World Trade Organization granted the U.S. permission to tax European goods as a way to recoup some of the losses the American plane maker Boeing sustained as a result. As summer came to an end, we were looking at potential 100% tariffs on cheese from the EU. There was a bit more debate throughout September, and on October 18th, the final tariff details went into effect. Instead of a 100% tariff on all imported cheeses from the EU, cheese will be hit with a 25% tariff. And not all cheese from the European Union is on the extensive and detailed list. For example, most French cheeses will not be taxed, however, Italian cheeses will. Here with me in the studio is to talk more about the finalized tariffs is Daniel Schneider, Director of Imports and Licensing at Emmy Roth Cheese. At Emmy, Daniel handles anything related to purchasing, planning, customs, the FDA, and the USDA. He is also the first vice president of the Cheese Importers Association of America. Originally from Switzerland, Daniel is currently based in New York City. Daniel, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thank you very much, and very glad to be here, Elena.
Great. I'm so happy to have a guest in studio. You know, we have a lot of call-ins, so this is very exciting for me.
And this is a perfect setting. I love to be in Brooklyn.
Yes,
and
it's the best.
Can't wait to actually taste the pizza here afterwards.
At Roberta's.
With lots of imported cheese, I hope.
Always. So as a bit of a disclaimer, I want to first mention that at Emmy Roth, you're focused on importing Swiss cheeses.
Correct.
And making Swiss-style cheeses here in the U.S. too, in Wisconsin.
Correct.
Swiss cheeses are not included in this whole current tariff debacle, though, as Switzerland isn't part of the European Union, Do I have that right?
That is absolutely correct, yep.
Okay.
And I appreciate the disclaimer ahead of the conversation we're going to have.
Yes. Well, and that said, I imagine in your role with the Cheese Importers Association of America that you're representing many businesses that are directly going to be impacted by these tariffs and already have been.
Absolutely. You correctly stated. Mm-hmm. October 18th was the date. Mm-hmm. The USTR, the United States Trade Representatives, implemented the various cheeses from various countries mm-hmm. and did not offer any reprieve in regards to the starting date. Mm. So as of October 18th, all these listed cheeses were indeed being taxed by 25% additional tariffs.
Right.
And absolutely, within the Cheese Importers Association of America, the organization was founded in 1945. Mm-hmm. It's all about importing cheeses mainly mm-hmm. out of Europe.
Right.
There's other exporting countries such as Latin America or Australia, but the focus, clearly the bigger volume, comes out of Europe. Mm. So there's a lot of companies in the United States, specifically on the East Coast, when it comes to importing, logistics, mm-hmm. warehousing,
right.
that are absolutely being affected now.
Right. So, question for you. So the Cheese Importers Association of America did write a letter mm-hmm. when everything was... it was actually testimony, I believe, that was then printed, right?
There were a couple of efforts we did, yes. So the first one was an open comment period mm-hmm. by the USTR, mm-hmm. allowed anyone and everyone to either in writing present their position or physically go down to Washington, D.C., mm. have a five-minute time slot to make your individual case.
Right.
So the Cheese Importers Association, if I may quickly explain what exactly we are.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's an association, and it's the majority of cheese importers that are participants. Hmm. And the main focus of the association is exactly situations like this, so that we have one voice rather than having 25 or 30 importers individually mm-hmm. having to go to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. we can go in as an association. Mm-hmm. We have legal representation, mm-hmm. and through that legal representation, we did indeed go in person to the hearings. Mm-hmm. We also did obviously write to the USTR our position.
Right.
And we also went to Washington, D.C., to talk to some of the congressmen, mm-hmm. some of the House of Representatives, to make our case,
right.
and we're successful in a sense of talking to the New Jersey representation, mm. Senator Menendez and Booker, to write a letter again to the USTR on our behalf in regards to the impact, not just for a cheese importer per se,
right.
but the entire value chain or supply chain from warehousing to logistics.
Right. And New Jersey has sort of a unique stake there, just because there's such a population of warehousing and logistics mm. companies based right in New Jersey, right?
Absolutely correct. In addition, there's companies who import cheese and then further convert that cheese. Mm. What I mean by that, you would import a large wheel of Parmigiano Reggiano
right.
and either grate that wheel mm. or make exact way portions. All that is done in the state of New Jersey mm-hmm. with American employees paying taxes, you know, going to the supermarkets, buy products again. So there's a much bigger impact than just the cheese importers as a company per se.
Right. So during that public comment period, I know that a lot of cheese industry people, distributors, but also retailers were sending out messages to the cheese-loving community of, you know, make a comment, write in and say why this will affect you as a consumer or your business. Did you get a sense of whether or not the public comments were part of the equation?
Yeah, that's one of the key questions, right?
Right.
Be this the individual companies who obviously commented on it, as well as retailers, as mm-hmm. well as the association. What value really had right. all those comments?
Right.
If you're looking at the result, not much, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
On the other hand, you can say the potential was, as you stated in the beginning, it could have been 100% right. additional tariffs. Mm-hmm. It ended up at this moment with 25. Mm-hmm. It didn't get to all cheeses. Again, you perfectly explained, France did not get really hit with any cheeses.
Interesting.
So it is a fairly good question. I don't know if I have an immediate straight answer.
Yeah.
We would like to believe that our comments had some impact.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point of, 100% versus 25.
Yeah, something did. So, something moved that dial.
Because it's when you talk about importers, it's the importer community is one, but it does affect retailers.
Mm-hmm.
It does affect people working at the retailer. Right. All of a sudden, your imported cheese becomes 25% more expensive. You may not need as many employees as you previously needed to handle that imported side of things.
Not to mention the huge pain in the butt that is reprinting all of your cheese signs and reprogramming your pricing in your POS. I have to say, my mind went directly there when I thought about when I heard about the final judgment here. So even a task like that is actually a monumental thing for a retailer to do this time of year, especially.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that side of things, and you said it as well, especially this time of the year. Obviously, we're heading into the busiest selling period for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And having that additional challenge makes it that much more difficult for not just, again, the importer, which, yes, it's a sizable challenge, but for the retailer as well.
Mm.
What are the importers going to do? How can I, as a retailer, move that price increase potentially to my consumer?
Right. So what are you hearing from your members now that the final, the tariffs were announced? It's no longer speculation. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's 25%, which is a lot lower than what it could have been. Are you hearing from people that they're still taking extra measures to... Did people get orders in ahead of time, basically, for harder aged cheeses? How are people talking about it?
That's an interesting question, and it obviously depends on who am I talking with.
Mm-hmm.
Am I talking with somebody who imports cheeses from France?
Right, no problem there.
They're like, exactly, quite pleased.
Right.
Perhaps that's not the right word, but they obviously don't have the same challenges as somebody who imports a Parmigiano Reggiano.
Right.
And if I'd like to stay on the Italian side, as you alluded to, if I'm importing a Grana Padano, Parmigiano Reggiano, I could have bought in additional inventory.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously these cheeses are extra long aged, and you can keep it a little bit longer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a Gorgonzola cheese from Italy, that you just can't do that.
Yeah,
so people
really
have done that, yes. People have bought in.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have also imported the cheese, but have not yet customs cleared it.
Mm.
They're keeping it in bond.
Right.
Waiting that potentially these additional tariffs are going to be gone away.
Hmm. Oh, and so sort of trying to wait it out.
Wait it out so you can
short.
Exactly. So you can import the cheese and you don't have to customs clear it yet. So you don't at that time pay the additional duty.
I guess at that point you're paying for the warehousing space, which would be less probably than that duty. Right.
But all it does still, no matter what you do, it increases your cost.
Mm, yeah.
If I'm buying ahead of the tariff implementation, I have capital that now I can't use elsewhere. I can't potentially invest in new machinery, new ideas, marketing efforts, what have you.
Right. Those dollars have to come from some line.
They got to come somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm being limited perhaps in supporting a retailer or a brand or people.
Mm.
And yes, if I don't customs clear it, I got to pay storage at a location as well. So either way, you're increasing your cost of doing business.
Right. So speaking of clearing it and sort of trying to time this, I know that the Specialty Food Association wrote a letter asking for sort of not an amendment. What's the word? It was an accommodation, I believe, where they were asking that cheeses imported before, I think it was October 2nd, be exempt from the tariffs. So where does that stand? Do you know what the deal is there?
Yes, and we tried the same logic to say, okay, we understand the decision.
Right.
There's obviously nothing that we could have done differently anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to ask the USTR to have any order that's already on the water, like a bill of lading would be attached to an order, that these shipments would still be allowed, even though they would arrive later than the 18th of October, but still would be allowed to get imported without the additional tariff.
Right.
And interestingly enough, throughout the process over the last couple of months, the USTR specifically on this particular topic did not entertain any meetings of any kind. We have tried numerous occasions. We were down in Washington, D.C., and simply were given the word that we appreciate your interest. At this time, we will not take any meetings. And therefore, it was through writing we got confirmed, as everybody else did, anything getting imported on the 18th is subject to the tariff. No questions asked.
Wow. Why do you think that is?
I would like to answer slightly differently, perhaps, as to the why. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. One of the answers given was to the entire importing industry, really, that this has been on the radar for at least 6-7 months. And they were asking, or they were asking the importing community to plan accordingly. Which is an interesting proposition,
with
right?
A perishable product,
exactly.
Just is nuts.
Exactly. If I'm talking about airline parts,
right.
Yes,
no
I can
problem.
Buy a couple of more screws, right, to keep on hand.
Right.
However, with a soft ripened cheese, again, I'm using the Italian example because Gorgonzola is on the additional tariff list. You simply cannot.
Right.
So, and hence we, from a Cheese Importers Association, I'm sure the specialty food as well, wanted to get not just clarification, we got that,
right.
but also the opportunity to have a dialogue.
Right.
We understand the tariff, we understand it to some degree, but we'd like to have a dialogue with you to look at these shipments that have left Europe.
Right. Well, the dialogue sounds like it was mostly one way, one-sided.
So far, yes. Unfortunately, yes.
So it's interesting. I mean, politics is so tricky, right? And and delicate and nuanced. I actually, this is a complete tangent, but I was just reading a great novel called The Goblin Emperor, which has nothing to do with cheese. And I actually think no cheese is consumed during the whole book. But the whole book is about politics and the nuance of like court, you know, being at high court and kind of appeasing everybody. Great novel. I'll just plug it.
Okay, appreciate
it. Totally random aside, listeners, for any readers out there. Take a cheese break and do a little reading. But, you know, it's sometimes it just really isn't obvious what the motivations are. It can get so complicated and so layered that to me, I'm like scratching my head, especially about the letter that the National Milk Producers Federation wrote. The U.S. National Milk Producers Federation writes this letter in support of these tariffs, which I cannot get my mind around. And so as diplomatically as possible, do you want to help me understand the politics there, Daniel?
Now we're getting on very icy ground.
Yeah, let's just tiptoe across this
lake. Of course. And the very basic answer is it is always interesting on politics and what is exactly the background of certain decisions. When I look at the list, I see a certain type of cheese, a certain tariff classification,
right.
we're using as an example, Finland is not on that list. And then the next section of the same, obviously, notification, different type of cheese, Finland is on the list. So you do wonder, right, to your point, who makes these decisions? Why is Finland on one list versus not on the other?
Right.
Why is Italy versus France?
Right.
So that by itself, to your point, yes, there is no rhyme or reason from what I can see. In regards to the letter from the National Milk Producers Association, not necessarily surprised that they would obviously be in favor of these tariffs.
And is that like big dairy? Is that what we're talking about?
That is absolutely big dairy.
Okay,
and
so that's...
Not just big in size. Obviously, you have a huge industry here in the United States compared to a country in Switzerland, per se, with 8.5 million people as the total population.
Less than New York City.
Exactly, right? Way less traffic, too, on the roads, if I may add.
Well, better public transportation, I'll give you that.
That's true, too. Thank you, though. That's good. But having said that, it's in any country, like Switzerland or the EU as a whole, the domestic dairy world, as I would call it, always is very near and dear to the political side of things. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of money involved when you talk about the farming and the producing and just mm-hmm. the entire agriculture sector. Obviously, it's quite powerful. And the same thing is here in the United States.
Right.
So if you have a government of the United States who is now helping you to potentially sell more cheese, exporting-wise, as well as domestically, you can make mm-hmm. that argument as well, mm-hmm. because of the additional tariffs, mm-hmm. less imported cheese perhaps available, more opportunity
could
for the
it.
Exactly U.S. production.
Although then, it makes sense, it being big dairy, because what we're talking about are cheeses that are either very fresh or cheeses that aren't aged that long. Because again, it's like if you make a one-year-old cheese... And, you know, a long-aging, natural one-year cheddar, you're not going to benefit from increased demand right now because you don't have the cheese, right?
Not right now. Right. And I don't think this is necessarily just a quick fix. And again, we can have a very long conversation about mm-hmm. tariffs and the current administration using tariffs as a new bargaining chip or as a new...
Yes, it's like the buzzword.
Exactly. I mean, China, a little bit more familiar perhaps.
Right.
We had it with Mexico as well to some degree. Now it's the EU as mm-hmm. a whole, obviously mm-hmm. being taxed, additionally taxed. Mm-hmm. So I do understand the letter being written. I do understand the proposition of protection mm-hmm. of some sorts to your domestic marketplace.
It's almost an opportunity in that sense to just...
Correct.
To put that flag in the ground in a big way.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And our argument against it is we believe we can quite nicely live beautifully next to each other.
Right.
Compared to the domestic, and I'm not just talking about cheese, I'm talking about the mm-hmm. entire agriculture or milk,
right.
as you say, there's no comparison on volume and mm-hmm. opportunities. And we just like to believe that with the imported cheeses now, mm-hmm. there's a demand for it. There is a consumer mm-hmm. who is looking for this particular
right.
type of cheese.
Right. It's so true. And show me like the exact substitutions for some of these old world cheeses. I mean, I love American made cheeses more than mm-hmm. anyone, but it is sometimes, you know, tricky to, you can't just say one is the same exact thing. It's not the case with specialty food in general. That's the beauty. That's why we love it. Right.
And that's, to your point, exactly that, right? You have a variety mm-hmm. of options. If you go these days to any supermarket, to any specialty stores, there is fantastic American-made cheese available.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the old-school, history-based European cheese, mm-hmm. be it is now out of Italy, be it is out of numerous countries.
Right.
And I do believe that it's about variety.
Yeah. Well, on that note, it's just about time for a quick break. But before we pause, listeners, I want to put the call out to you on this topic. As cheeses impacted by the tariffs land here in the U.S. this month, we want to know how and where you see the impact. Are you a distributor and taking a slightly smaller margin, a monger, changing all of those European prices on the signs, or an enthusiast noticing an increased cost at your local shop? Let us know how the tariffs are manifesting in your area of the cheese world. You can reach us on social media at Cutting the Curd or at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be back in just a moment with Daniel Schneider.
Since the mid-1800s, before Wisconsin was even recognized as a state, its resident cheesemakers have been putting the art into artisan cheese. When early settlers from Switzerland, Germany, and Italy came to Wisconsin, they brought their cheesemaking expertise with them. They chose Wisconsin because the terroir reminded them of the homes they'd left behind in Northern Europe. The soil and water of Wisconsin is nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin's cheesemakers draw from their rich European heritage and cheesemaking traditions, and combine them with incredible innovation to produce half of the nation's specialty cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers never stop experimenting, trying to improve, and dreaming of your next favorite cheese that has yet to be imagined. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th, for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Join us to explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, where you'll taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Join the party. Tickets are available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with Daniel Schneider of Emmy Roth and of the Cheese Importers Association of America. So I want to move away from the specifics of the tariffs for a moment and ask you a bit about your experiences in Washington and handling the government agency side of your work. So you mentioned that in your role with Emmy Roth, you handle things that are FDA and USDA related. What does that exactly mean?
One of the steps, so the first step actually is U.S. Customs. So any item that enters the United States has to be customs cleared through U.S. Customs.
Okay.
Based on your items, you get a certain tariff number assigned to you and you pay your duty.
Mm-hmm.
That's for literally any item that enters the United States.
It's a transaction that happens.
It's a transaction.
No
you have to
what.
Present your invoices. You get paid. You get charged.
It'd be nice if you got paid.
Exactly. That is actually true. That'd be a beautiful thing. You get charged based on your customs tariff number, mm-hmm. and it's based on a value
okay.
in most cases.
Okay.
And when you do import a food item, such as cheese that mm-hmm. we do, you then have the Food and Drug Administration involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of any time you're serving a food, drug item, it gets checked by the FDA as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you following all the rules, all the regulations? What I mean by that, and you may have heard the newly implemented Food Safety Modernization Act.
Mm-hmm.
And under that Food Safety Modernization Act, there's numerous categories. One of them is the Foreign Supplier Verification Program.
Ah, that sounds like a lot of paperwork.
It is exactly that. And I do have to say that, though, I like the approach the FDA has taken. What I mean by that is previously, the FDA, if they reviewed the paperwork and wanted to see a particular shipment,
mm-hmm.
wanted to perhaps look at the cheese, wanted to even taste
mm-hmm.
And test the cheese, they were only doing this at the time the product entered or was actually at the port in the United States.
Okay.
So it already traveled quite a bit.
Right.
And the FDA then, up on arrival in the United States, made a certain determination.
Okay.
Now, under the Foreign Supplier Verification Program, they have moved that liability, per se,
mm-hmm.
back to the supplier.
Hmm.
And yes, it is a lot of paperwork,
uh-huh.
but what it truly does say is you as an importer are responsible to make sure that your supplier, no matter where that supplier might be, to follow proper, clean food production,
okay.
food handling.
Okay. And how do they enforce that? Like, do they do supplier visits overseas?
Mm-hmm.
Do they audit sort of randomly? What's their process?
Yep. It is random.
Uh-huh.
And they do it twofold. First, they actually do come to the importer of record. So
okay.
Emmy in New York mm-hmm. has had the FDA visiting us.
Okay.
And we had to present all the food safety plans to the FDA.
Hmm.
And that is being picked based on your customs entry.
Okay.
As we were importing,
right.
they would pick a single entry, a random entry, and say, you as MUSA, as the importer of record, we would like to visit you. We would like to verify your paperwork.
Hmm.
So that's where the paperwork part comes into play, as you stated earlier.
Right.
Also, and we've also had this earlier this summer, that the FDA actually spent 3 days at our facility
wow.
in Switzerland
whoa.
To actually verify the supplier,
wow.
which in our case is Emmy in Switzerland. And they go and literally spend 3 days inside our conversion facility.
Uh-huh.
How do you handle cheese?
Hmm.
We're selling a 6-ounce Le Gruyere
right.
cheese in the United States. being converted in Switzerland, they would like to understand exactly
how is it cut, what happens,
where is the cheese the coming process? From,
wow.
How is it being cut, how do you clean the machinery, because after the Le Gruyere, we may do an Emmentaler, we may do an Appenzeller. Mm. How do you clean between the cheese, the different types of cheeses?
That's so interesting. So just thinking about it happening on the Swiss side, I mean, in Switzerland, Emmy is, I'm sure, also exporting to other countries that are not the United States. So does that just become a wild conflagration of requirements? Or is the Food Safety Modernization Act much more specific and it kind of covers things that other countries also require?
There's a lot of overlap. I mean, there's obviously food rules in Switzerland. There is the EU, who has very stringent rules as well. Right. So a lot of what Switzerland does or EMI does in Switzerland is absolutely the same as the FDA is looking for. Mm. So there isn't a much, you know, too much to be done to comply with the FDA. So we're well situated in that regard. But yes, there are certain exporting countries. I can think of the Far East. I can think of Russia, who then have even more specific requirements. Mm. And that's where our quality team in Switzerland every so often does get challenged, yes.
Mm. Very interesting. So how do you stay on top of those details? Do you have like an insider leak in Washington?
I only wish. I may would have gotten my USTR meeting, right?
Maybe,
if I had those links.
Yeah.
No, the best resource for me is truly the Cheese Importers Association of America. Mm-hmm. As a group, have much bigger voice. Mm. And we also have a Washington, D.C. representation.
Okay.
So we do have on-site access to FDA. Mm-hmm. We have on-site access to customs. We have on-site access to the USDA.
Okay.
And we do have access to the USTR as well. We've met with these people before. Mm-hmm. Just in this particular case of the Boeing Airbus, they weren't able to...
The door was shut.
Exactly, until now. Mm-hmm. So that's where the benefit truly comes into play for me, where there's a lot of resources throughout the cheese importers. There is other importers who may face the same challenge. Mm-hmm. And again, we can then go meet with FDA, talk about the Food Safety Modernization Act, talk about very specific terms within.
Right.
So through the cheese importers, I do get most of my knowledge and expertise.
Yeah, that's great. How long have you been on the executive board there?
Yes. So the cheese importers, we have a board of 27 board members.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's most known cheese importers have a seat on the board.
Right.
And then within the board, there is 5 executive board members.
Okay.
And once you're on the executive board, you will get to become president.
Which I hear is just around the corner for you.
That is actually correct. Next May will be my turn.
Wow.
And every president gets the honor to serve for 2 years.
Okay.
So it's a refreshing of the board. It's a refreshing of the executive committee.
So you know more than 2 years. That's a pretty short term, actually.
It is. Excuse my smiling here. It's a good time because you already have like 8 years prior. You're part of the executive committee, so you're fully and quite engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And as great as the Cheese Importers Association is, it is a hobby.
Right.
To some degree as well. Obviously, my paycheck is coming from Emmy.
Right.
And the cheese importer is very important. Mm-hmm. As I stated, a lot of knowledge, a lot of expertise we're getting through the Washington representation, which then I can obviously use at my day job. But 2 years is a good enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And it also keeps it fresh from a people perspective.
Yeah. Do you have any specific sort of projects or ideas that you're excited to do as president that you, I don't know, that you're cooking up as you look at the future?
Yeah, no, there's always that, right? Do you want to continue what we started? We have educational programs. We do the Washington representation.
Mm-hmm.
But you're always trying to find something new or different just for you.
Right.
So since I still have about 8-9 months, I want to see how the next couple of months play out.
Yeah.
Specifically around, and that's obviously a very important topic for us, on some of those trade discussions.
Right. How often are you having trade? You know, this tariff news is has been huge, obviously, for the industry. And then, you know, back when the, I think it was, what, 2004, around then, with the Roquefort situation, the tariffs on Roquefort that went through and lasted for 10 years.
Correct.
How often are you talking about smaller tariff-type situations?
Yep. One good example, a couple of years ago, the FDA, out of the blue, came out and stated it is not healthy anymore to age cheese on wood boards.
Yes, I remember this.
And this is not just an import.
This is a cheese-making issue.
So obviously when that came out, all of us were, again, stop everything.
Right.
And immediately started to make phone calls, and we had, you know, emergency meetings. What is our next step? Mm-hmm. So these are some of the topics that do come up fairly quickly. We also have, when you import cheese to the United States, there's a quota system in place. And there is also topic on the license, on if you don't use a certain amount of your license, you know, you're going to lose it.
Interesting.
And that's driven by the FDA as well. And that's a topic we've been discussing with the FDA for quite some years. We would like it to be eliminated. So far, we've just gotten it, you know, to be kicked down the street a little bit more, another 5 years, another 5 years.
Right.
But there's a lot of these smaller topics that the general public may not see.
Right.
But it takes a lot of time and resources to not just meet with the FDA or a USDA per se, but you have to prepare ahead of time. You do have to go down to Washington, D.C. Takes a day or two out of your day as well. So there's definitely some topics that you may not see. Or they're not as big visually in public as the Airbus, Boeing tariff. Yeah.
Right. How did you get into this type of work? I mean, were you like always interested in sort of government operational stuff, or how did you land here?
How did I land here? Now, I don't know if we have that much time, but
the short version.
Yeah, the short version is as a Swiss citizen, we all like cheese.
Yes. Comes with the territory.
Exactly. It comes with the territory. I've been in the United States for the last 28, have been with Emmy for 13, and just enjoy the retail world, the food side of things. And as I went through various steps within Emmy as a company, had the opportunity to stay close with Switzerland from a whole purchasing planning perspective. And as, you know, being involved in the import side, you quite quickly become very familiar with all these rules and regulations, be these existing ones, like the quota system has been in place for centuries, and then very new ones like the Food Safety Modernization Act, like this now tariff discussion.
Right. Very interesting. And do you have, how big is the team that works under you or with you?
Yeah, no, it's with us. It's all one team. We are three people at Emmy who manage that on a day-to-day business.
And are you all based in New York, or is there somebody in Monroe and someone in Switzerland?
The team here is in New York.
Okay.
We're not in New York City. I want to be correct there. We are in Orangeburg, New York, which is in Rockland County.
Okay, just north of the city.
Exactly, half an hour north of the city, correct. Yeah. So it's a fairly small team. A lot of has to do also with just technology. A lot of improvements were made from a company perspective, but also from the government side. All these customs entries and license transactions, they are very easily done on online.
In terms of you can be, sort of be anywhere for them.
You could be, absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting. And I was, as I was thinking about your role at Emmy and how interesting it is as a company with Emmy Roth, you know, having these like one leg in Switzerland and one here in the States in Wisconsin. How would you describe the culture, at least of your team and of Emmy itself, you know, in your experience working in this sort of pocket of it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And a lot of people always ask me, specifically back home from Switzerland, yeah, but the Americans, you know, what do they know about cheese? Right? So that's the cliche comment or question that I hear all the time. And I always have to say that there is tremendous cheese being made in the United States. Be this goat cheese, be this cow milk cheese. And as you, I'm sure, very well know, just about 2 or 3 weeks ago in Italy, Rogue Creamery became world champion.
It's amazing.
Out of 3,000 plus entries from all over the world.
It's really so
just to prove amazing. The point that American cheese has absolutely arrived.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting proposition for us as a company. We do, as you correctly stated, heavily import cheese out of Switzerland. We're the number one importer of cheese from Switzerland. But we do have two facilities who make cheese in the United States in Wisconsin.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think the combination is ideal.
It's it allows you to A, have more than just one leg to stand on business-wise, but you also can go out to your distribution community, to your retailer community, and really become this resource of not just import cheese or not just of domestic cheese, but actually become that resource for both.
Right. You have a really rich list there.
Exactly. Yep.
Very good.
Which
next, you just have to figure out how to build a portal from Wisconsin to Switzerland so that we could just easily go back and forth.
Yep.
I think that's the next phase.
I'm sure it will be soon, right?
You said that there, you know, the technology is getting there.
Exactly. Absolutely right.
All right. Well, as we get to the end of our episode today, I'm thinking about, you know, advice that we can give to our listeners. And one thing that I'm, you know, that I think is interesting in terms of our industry, you know, the artisan cheese industry and the specialty food industry is not enormous in the United States. And I think one thing I'm always interested in is how can people carve out unique niches for themselves? How can people get into work that they didn't expect to be in that sort of stems from a love of cheese? And so my question for you is, what advice would you give someone who is maybe starting off in their cheese career, even maybe just, you know, a cheesemonger at the retail counter, but is really interested in a longer term professional career in cheese? How would you advise that person if they're kind of fired up about these, you know, more governmental tariff side of things?
And you started off quite well from a cheesemonger perspective. Any cheesemonger has quite a sizable knowledge for all the different types of cheeses, be this import, be this domestic cheese. And if you really, and I appreciate you clarifying it more on the governmental side and rules and regulations side, if you do work in a cheesemonger setting, you're working with distribution companies, you're working with companies such as an Emmy, right? As simple as pick up the phone. Talk to our, you know, talk to your representatives, be this on the sales side maybe initially, but start the dialogue.
Yeah.
Emmy, are you looking for, you know,
help
adding to your team,
area.
Right? We're we're trying to grow, every company is trying to grow, there's opportunities. We do outreach from a cheese importers association perspective as well. We go to colleges, for instance. We offer internships every summer. To go and experience 10 weeks at a, you know, cheese importer.
Yeah.
Marketing side, supply chain side.
Interesting.
So there is these ways, but for me, the real advice is, I mean, learn as much as you can while selling cheese, while preparing cheese.
Right.
But talk to your to your suppliers, really.
Use the resources that are actually at your fingertips.
Right there for you. Exactly
I think it's a great reminder. Yeah. I think it really is.
Never hurts to ask, right?
Yes, yes. Yep. Really good point. Okay, final question for you. And this is a cheese question. Since we've been talking big level cheese on this show, but not super specific, what cheese are you most excited about right now on that lovely list, on that lovely Emmy list?
On that lovely Emmy list?
Yeah, that your list between your importers, your domestic cheeses. You could pick one from each side if you need to.
I appreciate that, because otherwise I would have to pick one coming out of Switzerland.
Ah.
Being
Swiss,
I would have to, exactly, I would have to pick one from Switzerland.
How could you not?
Exactly, how could I not? So I appreciate the offer on both sides
of the
exactly right. on the domestic side, Wisconsin cheese, we make a fabulous Grand Cru, which is an Alpine style cheese.
Very tasty,
different ages as well. So it's a different taste profile for anyone really. Mm-hmm. Personally, I like the extra aged. I like a little bit more of a flavor to my cheeses.
Right.
So I would go with the Grand Cru on the Wisconsin side.
Okay.
And on the Swiss side, one of my most preferred cheeses, I would bring it to any party there is, is the Tetemoine.
With the Girolle.
And exactly because
you would
of that.
Do your Girolle service.
I do actually, yes. I don't have to bring any party gifts.
Nope.
Just bring the Girolle and bring a half wheel of Tetemoine.
Perfect. You'll always be invited back.
I always be invited, exactly. Yeah, it's just it's a unique cheese. It's made in a specific area of Switzerland and it has a good story. Mm-hmm. It means monk's head. The monks used to make that cheese. And as you so perfectly alluded, makes beautiful florets out of the Girolle.
Yeah.
So.
Did the monks use the Girolle? That's the part of the history that I never could figure out.
They made the cheese. The Girolle came a little bit afterwards.
The Girolle came from some fancier people.
I'm sure some marketing expert.
Some genius.
Yeah, exactly. Was like, why don't we do florets now? And
Although there's part of me that really likes to imagine monks using the Girolle and eating the florets. I'm just going to imagine that.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me here in the studio today, Daniel.
And thank you very much for having me. This was absolutely great and a lot of fun.
It was also just great to hear your updates on this tariff situation. I feel like we're very well equipped with information. So
good.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.